Welcome to Breaking the Underdog Curse with Dr. Don McDonald. This show is for vitalistic chiropractors that want to take their practice to a new level. Whether that is higher volume, less stress, more congruency, or just want to continually learn and evolve. Every Wednesday, I will be bringing you an interview that will provide you with either mindset or strategies that will help you overcome your underdog curse. Whether you're plateaued, afraid to fail, or stressed out due to overwhelm, this podcast will show you how others have overcome their challenges. Make sure to go to www.drdonmcdonald.com where you can sign up to get notifications when new shows are released and see previous ones you may have missed. I hope you enjoy the show and don't forget to crush the curse. Are you a people pleaser? I know I sure am. And when you mix that with being a chiropractor, it can create a lot of trauma. I know firsthand, it can wear away at your health, your relationships, and your practice. I term this the underdog curse, and I've spent the last 15 years coming up with a solution. My book, The Underdog Curse, was written to help others live a more authentic life. This is very challenging if you're externally influenced. When you take an externally influenced person and have them try to spread the message of chiropractic, it can be very challenging. If you'd like to get back to who you really are, regain your health, strengthen your relationships, and increase your worthiness, please visit Amazon.com and pick up your copy of The Underdog Curse today. Remember, if we take the time to nurture ourselves, we are much stronger at serving others. For chiropractic to thrive, we must have thriving chiropractors. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Breaking the Underdog Curse. This is Dr. Don, your host. And today I have a special guest, Dr. Pam Jarbo from Massachusetts. How are you doing today?
Hi, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me here today.
That's awesome. So I got to meet Pam at Focus last year. And that was the first time that I met her. But my wife actually has been able to spend more time with you than I actually have. And so she was like, you have to get her on your podcast. So Brandy really adores you and loves spending time with you. And so she said that you'd be amazing. And again, we got to spend some good time there down in Oklahoma in Focus.
Dr. Shim puts on an amazing program.
Yeah, it was great. And I got to see you speak. And then we got to talk a little bit about my book because you had a chance to read my book. Yeah. And what, just to start off with, what's your personality style?
Oh, I think loyalty dog. Yeah. Is that what you're asking?
Totally,
It was probably over a year ago that I read the book, but that's what rings out in my head. Can you tell me the other ones?
Yeah, so it's more like, that's more an amiable personality. So we had the kind of the loyal personality, you got the party personality, the driver, and then the analytical, right?
Well, I'll tell you, I'm an amiable driver, which is a weird combo, but I think my, because I remember talking to Brandy about this, my adaptive mechanism is amiable.
Right, so that's where you're the most comfortable.
No, I'm most comfortable as a driver, but I adapt into amiable because of what I had, you know, I just had to do that.
Right.
So a lot of extroverted skills, but I really like to just get stuff done.
Well, that's great. So we'll get into that because it's all like, I like to have this podcast a lot about the mindset. So we always talk about the underdog curse where you either feel like you're an underdog or you either get addicted to being an underdog. And sometimes that's mindset and sometimes that's mechanics, like actually some of the skills that we need to learn. So let's just, if you could just give an introduction to some of our listeners about who is Pam Jarbo, how did you get into chiropractic and where did you go to school and all that kind of stuff?
Sure. Well, I feel like a lot of people already know, but I was a chiropractic assistant 30 years ago today. I started working for a chiropractor, not today, but this month.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. So I started working for a chiropractor and I had an amazing journey. I learned a lot in that CA position. At the time, I didn't realize how incredibly influential I was just doing what I was doing. But then I got to learn after I left the position, wow, like I did have a really big impact that I didn't even know about. But anyway, after I finished that position, I went to school within a short amount of time. I went to Life University and I graduated in 1995. And I had practice in Atlanta. And then my husband and I, who we met before either one of us knew we would be chiropractors, which is really rare.
That is rare. And you lasted through chiropractic school. That's good because a lot of people don't.
Not only did we go through chiropractic school, but we had a baby while we were in chiropractic school. Wow. And yeah, that was not part of our big plan, but a wonderful, wonderful surprise. And so it's really intense. We've had many lifetimes together. We actually had a business together before we went to chiropractic school. So anyway, we moved up here after he graduated, I think it was in 2000. So I had a practice in Atlanta. Then we came up here and we had a practice. I think we're right now on our fourth practice because we just were finding where we really wanted to be. So.
That's cool. Yeah. So when you first started in practice, were you kind of as fabulous as you are now and just everything went perfect?
No. Are you surprised to hear that, Don?
I hope not, or else it'd be a boring interview. No.
Exactly. I really struggled in Atlanta in my practice there. So I really struggled on many different, you know, areas. And one thing I think is different, I'll just say before I even get into the specifics, is that I belong to a lot of entrepreneurial groups outside of chiropractic. I learn a lot about marketing and sales and business in general. And, you know, when entrepreneurs outside of chiropractic talk about being an entrepreneur, they're like, it's hard. You better expect for it to be hard. And you got to get a lot of help. And, you know, you need all hands on deck. And yet, I don't know. I think like I graduated thinking like, ta-da, here I am. And like, yeah, everybody's going to come rushing in on my door, you know, because I'm like, I'm ready. These hands are hot.
Totally.
But it wasn't like that. Surprise, surprise.
No doubt. So how long were you in that first practice in Atlanta?
For about 2 years. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And I amazingly, in spite of myself, I did decent while I was there. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I just had no skills for business or, you know, at all whatsoever. I had people, you know, I really loved people and I wanted to help them, and that was an asset. And I, you know, had a lot of chiropractic training, and those two things went in my favor, but it wasn't simple. It wasn't easy by any means.
And what did you find was the hardest part in that first bit? Because a lot of people will be watching this and they're like kind of new grads or just people just out in practice. And what kind of were the biggest challenges at the beginning?
I would say marketing. You know, I think the two things any new business needs is marketing and sales. And so chiropractors, I think we also think like we don't have to do that or something, but we do. We have to figure out messaging and talking to people, and we have to figure out care planning that, you know, Brandy's so brilliant to talk about. And so these are things that we really do need to learn how to do that. And I resisted it. I didn't really want to feel like it was smarmy, or I didn't want to be like a salesy kind of person. But then I was just like going to the opposite end, which was like, you can do whatever you want. Like, if you feel like it, you know, maybe someday call me, you know, which was there.
Super stressful, right? Did you ever hit a couple levels of racks where you just kind of were so stressed and it just, you kind of hit that wall?
Oh yeah. You know, it's funny because the way I like to talk to my clients about it is like, there's what's happening. Okay. There's a problem here. You don't know how to get your message out. You don't know how to build your business. This is what's happening. But then we layer what's happening on what we feel like the meaning that we attach to it. Right. Mm-hmm. So what was happening is like, I didn't have a marketing and sales plan. The meaning I attached to it is like, I stink. I'll never make it. Which is part of the underdog curse, right? It's all that noise. So like, as the river starts rising, which is the energy of you being in business, you just get faced with your own noise. And so that was what was coming up for me, was a lot of noise. And instead of problem solving about what was actually happening, I don't know if that's helpful, but that's
no, 100%. And kind of when, how did you kind of crawl out of that? Like, what was your kind of the beginning steps, or the first, like, how did you become aware of it? Because part of it, anytime there's an issue, right, if you're not aware of it, it's hard to change. So what was your first little aha?
The one that jumps into my head is like, when you say my first, I think it came in many increments, you know what I'm saying? Where I just became more empowered and took myself as a business person more seriously. But I think of why that happened, and I see it with other people, is you just get pushed back up against a wall, right? You just kind of get beat up. I don't know if you have this
experience. Oh yeah, 100%.
And so then, you know, you talk about feeling stressed. I felt like really upset. You know, my energy would just kind of go inward towards myself, you know, just like, oh, you know. And then I remember I just got pushed so far. I was like, oh my God, I'm going to do this. Like, there was no option B for me.
Right.
You know, like, I got to figure this out. But the one thing that popped in my head when you say, what was their one moment, I had this guy come in, and I've shared this story a couple times, so I apologize if it's redundant, but it was a really big moment for me. This gentleman came in who had cerebral palsy, and he, you know, like when you're new and you're just like all nervous about your new people, he came in and, you know, he had this history that was like, you know, so many problems, so many medications, so many issues on top of cerebral palsy. And I was just listening. And really, I kind of like, you know, I care about people so much. It's kind of a detriment sometimes. I'm listening and I'm, you know, just, I got lost in his information that was coming towards me. And I was like, oh my gosh, this poor guy, like, we got to find him a chiropractor. And then I was like, oh, I am the chiropractor. Like, I'm in charge here. Like, this poor guy. And so I immediately started to try to refer him to other people. You know, I say that one of the things I had in my favor was having a really great technique, but in my head, I was never good enough. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just never was going to be good enough for anybody, like, especially someone who intimidated me.
Right.
And, so, you know, this guy, I was intimidated for him, not about him. Just like, oh, I really wanted him to get the best results. And, you know, pretty much anyone in the country would have been better equipped than I. And I think a lot, right? A lot of chiropractors go through that. Well, anyway, so I immediately tried to refer him to people who were closer to him. He had taken 3 buses to come and see me. So, you know, that was like humiliating to me. I just felt like, oh my God, you poor thing. I've got to redirect you. And so he was like, no, I want to see you. You know, you're the person I've heard about. I want to come see you. This was a really important lesson because my mentor had said to me, look, people are not going to come to you for what you don't know. Think about that. Even for any student that's listening, no one is coming to you for your level of unknowing. They're coming to you for what you got right now, right?
Right.
So I just was like, okay, you know, I just accepted that. And, you know, when we went to go do his reevaluation, he came into the room and he was very dramatic. You know, from his childhood, he'd had these strap-on canes, you know, the metal things.
Yeah.
The really ugly, clunkety, clunkety.
Yeah.
So imagine this guy, I always imagine like he's getting on and off a bus, which is never easy, you know, with these canes. And so anyway, he came in for his re-exam and he dropped his canes off of him and stood up with his arms out, just wobbling like crazy. But for him, this was like a
huge
moment.
Yeah.
And then he, you know, broke down crying, told me that he was able to shake somebody's hands for the first time in his life because, you know, his hands were all gnarled up. And it was really moving and really touching. And also like a moment where I was like, give it up, Pam. Just take yourself seriously. It's not about you. It's about the power of life. And when we have the honor of being able to offer that to somebody and we can just let go about the mystery of why that happens or why it doesn't. Because I also think like we all look for the miracles after you have a case like that. You think like, oh, blind people are going to be able to see. People are going to be able to hear. You know what I mean? And I just like adjust somebody and just like stand back like, go ahead. Like, it's not the way it works, right?
But yeah.
Anyway, so that was a great moment for me to just relax into it and just realize that I needed to take myself seriously. And also the other thing is that, like I just said, like the drama isn't the thing. It's consistency over time. And the best thing I could say after all these years in practice is that the best thing we can give to people is what they're not getting. And, you know, my mentor and your friend, Dr. Peter Kevorkian, said that to me. And when he said it, I just was like, huh? Like they're getting what they're not getting, huh? Like I didn't quite get it, but it really speaks to the invisible effects of what we do, especially when we make a vitality shift. People are becoming more alive. And so that's quietly dramatic, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's pretty powerful. Eh?
I don't know. What were you thinking, Don, was going to happen when you called me? Not pretty powerful? Like,
yeah, no, I thought it was, like I said, it wasn't going to be fun and it wasn't going to be powerful, right?
Exactly.
Huh? It's like, duh. No, that's awesome. So one of the things we like to talk about too is keeping the chiropractor healthy and in their mindset. And first, like we'll talk about you and kind of what you've had struggles, but then again, you do a lot of coaching with others and then we'll talk about maybe some other examples that you've helped with other chiropractors too. But Have you had, you know, like I've done this practice too, where, you know, you hit that first level where you don't know kind of what you're doing, and then all of a sudden you get some success and then you start rocking it, but then you go out of balance and don't look after yourself, and then totally, and I burnt out too. And I'm not sure if you've ever gone through that, but maybe you could share. And then what did you learn and how to look after yourself better as being a healer, chiropractor?
That's like such an important question. I just want to acknowledge that I've done a lot of interviews and nobody ever asks about that. And I want to say, I think it's a really important conversation.
Yeah.
It's one of my biggest struggles is self-care in life. I mean, it's just like, I sometimes I wonder if that'll just be, you know, something that I always have to like be paying attention to. So I actually put in my Gmail calendar, because I schedule a lot of things. Like, let's say I schedule the time that I go to adjust. If I know that's what I do. So then I schedule a quarterly check-in about self-care. How am I doing? Am I staying on target about that? But what I found when I hit the wall, because I had two babies, and so that also added to it. My husband had an office in a different location. The kids were with me. I had this busy practice. My kids are literally some days on my back. I like had a backpack and I would be adjusting crazy. Don't recommend it. And I mean, just, you make dumb decisions sometimes. So, you know, but I just got better at like knowing that wasn't going to work. Sometimes the way that I got healthier was by really doing things that didn't work and just having to say like never again. But what I would say about self-care is that it has to be scheduled. Just like you ask, I ask anyway in our office, I like people to be on a plan. So I want them to schedule out to their next appointment. So like I started doing that for my own adjustments. And I also get acupuncture once a week and I do massage once a month, sometimes twice a month. So those things were care. But what I realized after a couple of years was those were ways that I was scheduling for other people to take care of me. Do you understand?
Yeah.
It wasn't really self-care, which comes in every single decision, right? Every day.
Totally.
So anyway, I saw that. I was like, oh, I just want other people to take care of me. I'm not really doing the job. And so I would say like I'm still in the middle of that process of learning about every little choice that you're making is either adding life or taking life away. And so that's an important thing to look at, all your choices, because, you know, we have a saying, my husband and I, when we talk about like the one with the most energy wins. We look at chiropractic as like, oh my God, that person has like endless amounts of energy. Of course, they're going to have the most amazing practice and program, you know, right. Or even with my coaching clients, the one with the most energy wins. So how do we go up the ladder of our own energy, whether that's physical steps, mental, spiritual, like what do we need to do just to get to the next rung? Mm-hmm. You know, and I think one of the things that I know for me is that I think about the mountaintop a lot. If we talk about the ladder, like let's say you want something. I want the mountaintop. I think you want the mountaintop, you know, just knowing your style. Like you're like, oh, I want to be, you know, here. But here sometimes is really nebulous. It's not clear where here is, but you're in that striving state of mind where you're just like, I know I'm not where I should be, which is the mountaintop. Like, can we clearly define what the mountaintop means?
Right.
Do you know what I'm saying when I say that?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And I think too, sometimes, or if we're so clear on what the mountaintop is and we're so driven to that mountaintop, we don't even enjoy the steps along the way. With that, that's a huge thing.
And a mindset shift to me is not to look up, but look down, look to where you were, because that's energizing. Whereas it's depleting sometimes if you're always looking at the top and saying like, I'm not there yet. And that's what we tend to do. Or I hear a lot of clients do that where they're judging themselves or putting themselves down, maybe for not having a multi-million dollar practice, if that's what they've defined the mountaintop to be. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, but look where you were, you know, a year ago. So can we just acknowledge at least that you're doing something? So we tend to just be focused on what we don't have. And our patients do the same thing, right?
Yeah.
They'll be focused on not working rather than like, but look where you were, you're moving forward. So
that's cool. So you when you first started this, because again, it would be like me, I kind of, you hit the wall, you're like, boom, we have to do something different because I can't sustain this. Because that's, and I think when, and if someone's getting to that point, this is what happened to me, was in my mind on my crazy Saturdays, I was kind of going like, I don't think I can do this for the rest of my life because I was so tired.
Yeah.
What did you do for the first steps? Was it just booking time for yourself, or what were your first steps to try to discover what would be freeing up that energy for you?
I'm trying to remember like that feeling, like you're talking about, like, did it happen during a shift or that this isn't sustainable? Well, I'll tell you, when that feeling hit for me, a lot of times, and we still see this, like, we didn't catch our vacation early enough. That's because vacation is a really big part of self-care.
Yeah.
So I think that feeling would come up if we somehow went like 6 months without taking vacation. I really think it should be quarterly.
Yeah.
And you know how, you know, in school they pace it so that you get a 1 week vacation, then you get a 4 week vacation. I mean, I think like we should do something like that where we do like 5 days and then the next quarter do, you know, 2 weeks or however you set it up for you. But I think pre-planning vacation is really important. For me, I don't so much, there was a time where I had Lyme disease at one point, and so that was painful.
Oh,
that
yeah.
Really hurt to adjust. But I think more like I get grouchy at people. So normally I have a lot of space to listen or, you know, to like be present for people. But whenever I start getting grouchy, I'm like, Pammy needs some downtime, you know, it's time. So that I think that might be the thing is the thing that comes to my mind is that it's really important to pre-pace your vacation time so that you know that it's coming and that you know you're going to actively take time to stop. But I mean, I think also like anti-inflammatory diet, you know, figuring out your own, you know, exercise protocols, whether it's yoga or weightlifting or whatever it is that you need to do to keep your joints strong. I do a lower force technique, so it's not as physically tiring, but I think it can be more, I just get kind of done.
Kind of mentally, it just kind of like fried.
Yeah, fried. It definitely fried as far as space holding.
Right. Less tolerant.
Right. Yeah. Less tolerant is definitely something that I see that happen with my clients where people really get under their skin then. But I also think people get under our skin if we don't have good boundaries.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Because the bigger the fences are for me, the more wide open my heart can be. So as long as I make sure I took care of what I needed, people can just do their thing, you know, and be a little bit, I say some people have ODD, you know, people have ADD and they have OCD. Some people in my practice have ODD, you know, they're super odd. And so when I've said that before, people are like, ODD, what's that? Do I have it? I'm like,
if you do, I can't tell you. No.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
So that goes to a really good point because again, a lot of chiropractors have that amiable personality style, right? And we're empathetic and we're open to people and we have a challenge, putting boundaries in place. So maybe, and I'm sure you talk with this with your clients a lot too. So maybe you can share with our listeners, what are some tips on how to put boundaries in with your practice members?
Well, what I think happens a lot of times is that, first of all, we have to like talk about what a boundary is, because a lot of times people assume that a boundary is me being against you. Like, let's say I needed, you know, I might just be like, bleh. When you get to that place, right? So then they have a negative connotation with a boundary because they think it means that they have to fight somebody or be mean to somebody or be harsh. And actually, I think a boundary is for me. And it's if I set really clear agreements right from the beginning, it makes it so much easier. There really isn't a lot of like conversation. And I think there's ways that you can be very graceful to set up your own boundaries. But sometimes people don't know what they are. They don't. And so to me, feelings are just like the fever is a signal from the body. Like, hey, you know what? Like I'm trying to work on something. When we feel resentful or we feel angry, you know, or we feel depleted, how do we go back and look at where did the train leave the track? And how did I not take care of what I needed in order to like allow my energy to be at a peak? And I just want to say one other thing about that. Is that like, I was just talking to a client yesterday and she was talking about something like this, you know, about like how it's hard to say, cause she's afraid that the other person won't like her, which is a big amiable problem.
Yeah.
That the other person will go away. If I say the truth about what it is. So I was trying to show examples of where that isn't the case. For her, like, let's show examples of how I behaved in the relationship and how did that make her feel. And so I was pointing out examples of if I said, this is the time that we're going to meet, or this is how much money it is, it actually moved her closer towards me because she understood what to expect. Whereas when we don't do that and we try and be tentative, there is a tension because the person is trying to figure out something. And instead of being really present with you, they're actually tense, like, well, but what does this mean? Or how long does this go on? Or what's going to happen? And so if we could just be clear and explain it to people, it allows people to relax in a lot of ways. I often use an example of a teacher, and I think I did this at Focus, so you might have heard it, but, you know, if a kindergarten teacher walked in, you know, to, if you walked into kindergarten the very first day and the teacher's like, sweetie, whatever you want, do you feel like learning? You know, do you want to take, if you want to put your backpack in the closet, sure. Like, it would be total chaos. It isn't fair to the kid. You're actually going to create a ton of tension because the child doesn't know what to do, and they're going to behave in a way that other people don't like. And then it'll create a weird energy where people are coming towards them. So I always look at it as like, if you're resenting the patient, it's because you didn't say what you needed. I see right. This also happen in teams a lot. There's mm-hmm. a lot of unconscious, unspoken expectations, and it happens. I mean, anyone who is a client of mine that's listening is probably doing an inner eye roll because I talk about it so much, but it's true. We all do it. Let's say my husband loves to be on time, and he has a thing in his head where he says, if you're not 15 minutes early, you're late. That's his belief, right?
Right.
Well, I didn't understand that. Nobody ever told me that agreement, right? So I'm like, you know, European about my time-ish, right? Ish yeah. is like how I feel about time, nine-ish, right? And so, you know, but there are certain people that have that thing, and then they feel upset or emotional or disrespected when, again, there's the situation that you have this belief about time, and then there's this meaning I attach to it, which is you don't respect me, you're causing me a problem, you know, whatever. So then that all that unconscious, unspoken expectation now creates a problem, and we have a speed bump, you know, to our productivity because we don't understand one another.
Yeah, that's the way. And it's almost like as you create a boundary, you're creating more certainty for the other person.
How much clearer.
Yeah, because they said that those closed loops, when it's uncertainty, it creates that psychological discomfort, and people are like, oh, what's going on, right? But it's funny because I think for that personality style, they think that it's hard. We call it that hard easy compared to easy hard, right? Where it does take a little bit more oomph to close that loop at the front, but it makes a huge difference, I think, in the long term.
I just want to make one other point because it's so brilliant what you're saying right there. It takes a little bit more oomph. I think it takes a willingness to create tension.
Yeah.
That's the way to name it, right?
Yeah.
So most of us amiables or even just healers in our heart, what we think our job is to make other people feel comfortable and to decrease their tension. But the truth is there are certain moments in practice when the new patient calls in, at the report of findings, at a re-exam, those are moments where the kindest, smartest thing you can do is to create enough tension so that there's an agreement, because then now you just made it easier and reduced tension later on.
Totally.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's nice because that helps to push them a little bit over the edge, right? Because mm-hmm. you're kind of getting them out of their comfort zone. Because again, a lot of our people, and again, I see this in my practice all the time. Most people, it's caught their subluxation, their trauma is caused from chronic stress, and those patterns that they live in all life. And sometimes we need to snap them out of it in a loving way, even though we want to, again, if we first in our brain, we want to call to be nice to them, but coddling them actually hurts them.
Sometimes it's a fine balance. Do you know what I mean? Like
yeah.
It is a fine balance because it's sort of like, let's say someone's super raw, like a family member just died, you know, like you could just put your hand on their shoulder, look at them a certain way, and that is going to be transformational.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So it doesn't take a lot of force. But other times when someone is behaving really badly, you know, like they need a teenager, they need like, look, you've got to snap out of it. They need a bigger forceful boundary. So I think it's, to me, I like to respond rather than a hard and fast rule about this is how we do it. I create a lot of sound bites, and I look at those moments where we need to, and I try to create a sound bite and a transition sentence and just ways of helping so that moment actually is easier for the person on the delivery end.
Well, and that's such a great point because that goes back to our first part, how important it is for us to look after ourselves as chiropractors, because if we have more tolerance, we can use all of our tools because it's impossible to cookie cutter everybody, right? So if we stay vital ourselves, then we can kind of deal with each situation differently using all the tools in our tool belt. So I like how that kind of links all together, right? Cool. Now, the next thing I want to talk about was you have a lot of history in marketing, and you do a lot with marketing. And how did that start? Like, how did you kind of go into that whole realm?
Mm-hmm. Well, I was in my second practice in Bedford, Massachusetts, and I was really frustrated because I was doing a spinal screening, and at the time my coach was in chiropractic. So I went to do the spinal screening. I didn't have any expectations, but you know, there might've been 10,000 people at the spinal screening. I signed up 26 people. So I got onto my coaching call and I was like, it was terrible. She's like, how was the spinal screening? Like, it was terrible. It was just the worst. I am so upset. I don't know what I need to change, but you know, I only signed up 26 people. And she was like, oh, 26 people, that's amazing. And so I was like, really? And she was like, yeah, like that's amazing. So, but here's the way I felt. And I looked at it was like, how low is the bar? You know what
I mean? Yeah, right? No doubt. They go, well, the cost was whatever, $1,000, and your average PVA, so you need one to pay to break even.
Right. That is a thing, right? It cost me $100 for the booth. I wasn't thinking about money. Again, my heart has always been, I want everybody to have this. I think I have like the best thing going. Mm-hmm. And I don't get it. Like, the dissonance between what I know and what everyone around me knows, it just like freaked me out. Like, I don't get this. So anyway, I mean, I'd always seen it. I won't get into like the weird, wacky marketing that I had seen growing into chiropractic. This was back in 1986.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I started, Tony Robbins had this series out and it was called something like the new money or the new marketing money. And so I started following the series. I signed up for all these different marketers. I wanted to learn from them. I started reading all these books because I just felt like I got to find a better way so that if I did go to a spinal screening, you know, I would know how to communicate this. And I just got into it. In undergraduate, I thought I was going to go into copywriting. You know, I always thought I was going to be a writer. I never thought I'd be a chiropractor. And so it was awesome to just learn from them. And so when I went into these marketing groups and these masterminds that I did, it was to grow my business. But as I was with them, they're like, wow, you have like this knack. I think other people would want what you have. And I also was helping all my friends. I used to call it the crisis hotline, you know, yeah. Our phone, like, I gotta go, my family needs me. But I was always wanted to help people. And then I just got into it formally. I think it's kind of similar to Brandy. Like, she's just always been helping people. And then it just becomes like, how do I streamline it so that what is in here can come out to help people?
Totally. And when you're talking, because you speak all around and you talk to a lot of chiropractors, what do you think some of the biggest mistakes are for marketing that chiropractors are currently making?
Well, the first one that I would say is that people misunderstand that marketing let me just ask you. What do you think marketing is? Like, when you think marketing, just give me some words back. As it applies to your office, okay?
Yeah, it would be awareness.
Okay.
I think it'd be awareness, education.
Okay.
Knowing where there's a need or a problem.
Okay, awesome. So you're different, you know, because you've been doing this for a lot longer. But most of the time, if I ask a student or someone new, give me words that you associate with marketing, they'll say, spinal screenings, talks, they're thinking about the emotional part, right?
Right, yeah.
But there's a thing that happens before the promotional part, which is the strategy. And actually, that is more marketing. You know, if you figure out your brand, who you're talking to, who you are to them, how to message your work in order to like psychically attract them more. There's a whole art there. And the way I compare it is like if you were had an arrow and you threw the arrow versus if you actually pull the arrow back and shoot. When you do the strategy, any work that you do to promote yourself actually goes much further, much deeper. And I have clients tell me that once I actually do this behind the scenes process with them, they're like, the results are incredible. It's so much better. So that's one of the biggest things I would say is that you don't really actually know what you're trying to do. You're just moving.
Right. You're just doing a bunch of stuff.
Exactly. Like a rat on a wheel.
Right.
And it creates a dissonance. I think even in communities that we're in, they don't know who we are, or what we're about.
And if they say there's a new grad out there or somebody who's just starting, is there any resources that you could kind of get them to, or they could read a book or kind of where they can just start their learning journey on how to create that strategy before they do all the stuff.
Yeah. How to create that strategy before they do all the stuff.
Are you going to write that book? Are you just in the process of writing that right now?
I'm trying to think of a resource. I know. I have, like, I teach online modules where I try and give it. I took resources from so many different places and I try to filter it to fit for chiropractors. Mm-hmm. So I'm just scanning my brain for all the different resources, like which one would be the most helpful, but I can't think of one right away. I'll say this, like, I like to have marketing conversations, and I have this Facebook group called Make Your Impact. So people could come in there, and it's much more specific to the person. So I actually think amiables need to do a different marketing than analytics. Or, right? Or drivers. Yeah. So it's more like you have to match your marketing to yourself, mm-hmm. and practice and to your audience. So, like, when I sit down with a client, I look at a menu that's about maybe 45 to 50 different options that I have videos and teach about. But then I'll just say, okay, these are the five that I'd like you to explore, but I need to personalize it for, like, who you are, who you say you want, you know, and stuff like that. So I think it's hard for me to give an outside resource right away. I just can't think, nothing's coming to mind, but maybe.
But that's great though, because that also just shows the chiropractors too, that there is, there's like almost the work that you have to do beforehand that they might not be even aware of. Cause a lot of times I came out of school, I had no clue. You just think, oh, I need new patients, I should do a screening, but realize there are resources. You can learn more, that it makes it a lot more effective if you do the work beforehand.
So much, you know, we had a program called Make Your Impact in Atlanta, and there was like maybe a handful of students who were there. And we showed them, look, this is what you can get ready on. And us as doctors, we're like, we wish we had done this. You know, there's so much you can do way before you begin.
That's cool. All right. Well, in closing, I was wondering if give you the mic there and see if you had any words of wisdom for the people out there in closing comments.
My words of wisdom are that you can, you will, and you must, but you're way more powerful than you realize. You know, especially if you're at the beginning of this journey, there's a lot of help around you. There's a net around you. You need to reach out and ask. I'm sure that anybody could private message any one of us in order to have a leg up. There's a lot of support for you. And that, you know, if you don't get results right away, just know that that delay is not a denial. You know, mm-hmm. it's a delay. Name it appropriately and just figure out, okay, what do I need to tweak in order to move forward? Don't make it mean something it doesn't mean.
That's awesome. All right. Well, thank you so much for being on the call.
Thank you very much for having me. It was delightful.
And everybody out there, there was like tons of nuggets that we learned there about looking after yourself and learning about marketing and learning about the pre-marketing before you actually get out to do the stuff. So everybody take some of those notes, get them implemented in your practice. And until next time, crush the curse.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you receive value from this episode, please take some time to rate and review us on iTunes or your favorite place to listen to podcasts. If you know a fellow chiropractor that could benefit from this message, please share it with them. Because it's my goal to provide you with great content, please contact me if you have any questions at drdonmcdonald.com or find me on Facebook. I look forward to hearing from you. So until next time, Dr. Don out.